Hey History is a podcast all about Australian history, where the kids ask the questions. I'm your host, Axel Clark. In each episode of Hey History, we'll hear stories and answer your questions. Questions like...
I would ask the convict what their living conditions was before they got sentenced.
What was your crime? And what was your punishment?
I'd ask a convict, how did you remember your family back home?
And at Hey History, we don't just stop when we get an answer. Because...
How do we know what really happened? And is there another side to the story?
In this episode, we'll find out how kids became convicts and what a convict kid's life was like in Australia. You can listen to this episode straight through, or stop halfway if you'd like. I'll tell you when we've reached halfway.
Hey, History.
Let's go. In the Hey History podcast, the kids ask the questions. And I'm a kid, and I'd like to ask you something. Say you're a kid in primary school and you steal something, like some chips from the school canteen or the local shop, and then you got caught. What would happen next?
Sometimes when kids like steal, they get in trouble from their teacher.
You would go to the principal's office to meet.
When it would get to detention or two, you get expelled.
I have these cousins and Nana asked us if we could go to Aldi to buy some rice for her so she could cook dinner. And we went into Aldi and then my cousin saw this weird Barbie book and I said, put that back. And she was like, but I want it. And she just held on it the whole time. She didn't scan it. And when she walked out, the big buff man stopped her and started scanning her and she got in really big trouble. And then she started crying. My nan got her in really big trouble and she didn't get dinner.
Yeah, in Australia today, if you're a young kid, all of these things might happen. But in Britain, 200 years ago, things were very different.
I mean, you would commit a really small crime and then the court's really harsh on you, and sometimes it was kids that were just our age.
They were sentenced to transportation.
Yep, transportation. Instead of going to prison in your home country, you were taken by ship to another country to work. In Britain, these adults and kids were called convicts. Britain sent convicts all over the world, and from 1788 onward, Britain sent convicts to Australia. A lot of convicts and convict children ended up in Tasmania, or, as it was called back then, Van Diemen's Land. In each episode, we pop into a school and see what they can tell us about Australian history. Let's go to...
Princess Street Primary, Sandy Bay. We're on Mooneena country.
Princess Street Primary School is in Hobart, the capital of Tasmania. Guys, what can you tell us about convicts?
One moment you're just with your parents enjoying life and then you're just on a boat and you're very unlikely to see your parents ever again.
I'll be like scared, sad and confused.
I don't think convicts were bad people. I think people were hard on the convicts.
Convicts were usually just broke people that needed to steal food and they couldn't really get it anywhere else.
When or if I made it to Australia, I would think, oh, finally, I'm here, and then suddenly I'm enslaved and I have to work. And then also, a lot of us are descended from convicts. I think it was my great-great-uncle or aunt, they were convicts.
I think I have a convict, but I don't really know anything about them. I would like to know more, though.
Yeah, me too. What was it like for convict children in Tasmania? It must have been a huge shock, going to this small island all the way at the bottom of Australia. An island that's home to the Palawa First Nations people. From 1803 onwards, convicts started arriving in Hobart. It was a really different world to where the convicts had come from. Some things would have felt familiar, like the bad weather and freezing winters. And other things must have seemed incredible, like seeing kangaroos and emus. Can you imagine seeing one for the first time? Another way it was different from back home was the people. Because penal colonies were like open-air prisons. The streets of Hobart were full of soldiers. The British soldiers were there to guard the convicts. The soldiers also had battles all over Lutruwita, Tasmania, with the First Nations people, whose land they were colonising. Later, the battles turned into a war, the Black War. So, this was a pretty harsh place. On the outskirts of the settlement, there was a place called the Female Factory. It's not a factory with big, noisy engines. The Female Factory is where convict women and girls lived and worked.
Folks, I would start the tour offering you a seat.
This is Marcel Mangan, a tour guide here.
So here at the Cascades Female Factory, the people that were here were the Muwinina people. So as we walk this World Heritage site, we remember that they were here first. We remember their deep connection to the land, and we pay our respects to elders past and present of the modern Palawa Aboriginal community here in Lutruwita, Tasmania.
She's going to take us back in time to the year 1839.
I'm going to talk to you about a girl called Grace. Now, Grace lives in a place called Aberdeen. That is in a country called Scotland, which is part of the United Kingdom. Now, you can imagine Grace out there on the streets of her big city. It's crowded and it's noisy and there's people everywhere. At this time in history, you were either really, really, really rich, or you were the other end. You were really, 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 really poor. And there's no government helping you. There's no help at all. So the only way that Grace can survive is to do what has to be done. And this means she has to steal. She gets caught for stealing when she is just 11 years old. She gets caught again when she's just 13 years old. Grace sees a small child who's got some nice clothes and she thinks, they'd be easy to steal. And that's actually what she does. Grace takes all of the clothes off that child and then she lets the child go, thank goodness. So the child gets to go back. But Grace gets to keep the clothes so she can go and sell those clothes. She can make some money. And then she can buy some food. That crime is called child stripping.
It almost sounds kind of funny. Like you're just walking down the street and some kid takes off your clothes in broad daylight. But actually, it's not really funny. Back then, clothes were expensive or took a long time to make by hand. And you often only had two outfits. Make that one outfit. Not only were some of the crimes different back then, a lot was different back then. Like what happened to you if you committed a crime. And how old you were. Being old enough to get charged with a crime and go to court has a fancy name. The Age of Criminal Responsibility. How old do you think you should be? And what's the youngest age you can be charged with a crime in your state? Now, let's go back to Grace. Remember her? She's the one who ripped the clothes off that kid and got done for the crime of child stripping.
Grace goes to jail, this time though, for 30 days at 13 years of age in a Scottish prison. The age of criminal responsibility is just 7. So that means you could go to jail at 7. Hard to believe today, isn't it? Grace gets to the age of 16 and she's caught stealing again. She's sentenced to transportation for 7 years at the age of 16. Transportation means you'll go in front of the magistrate, they'll convict you, you'll get on board a convict sailing ship, and you'll sail to the other side of the world for stealing to survive.
Hey, I've got a question.
I would ask a convict, were their parents alive?
What about the convict's parents? Did they help them?
Great questions. Do you want to hear the stories of some other kid convicts? Here's the story of George Pickering from London. In 1840, George was 13 years old. He stole a pair of shoes. It wasn't his first crime. George's dad, Thomas Pickering, begged the court to change the sentence. He said that George knew he made a mistake and that he was only young. But George Pickering got 7 years transportation to Australia. He never saw his dad, his mum, and brothers and sisters ever again. And here's the story of Ellen Cayley, who stole a handkerchief, a bit of cloth you used to blow your nose before tissues were invented. It was not her first crime. She'd already been in prison for a week for breaking a window. Ellen was 12 years old when she stood before the court. She told the judge, "I did not do it." Ellen Cayley got 10 years transportation to Australia. Breaking a window, stealing a hanky. Even the things that were crimes were so different back then. And then there's stealing kids' clothes or a pair of shoes. Today, you could get a police warning or an arrest for those. But don't forget, there were serious crimes that were committed by convicts too. So Ellen, George and Grace were just some of the kids and teenagers whose lives changed forever. They're separated from their families and everything they know. These kids were now convicts. Before they go to Australia, they'll spend some time in prison in Britain, waiting for their boat to be ready. What do you even do in prison while you're just waiting around? Maybe you'll be thinking about the people you'll be leaving behind. These days, you can just look at photos of the people that you love. But back then, photos went around, not for most people. So maybe in prison, you'll get one of these made. Listen to this. What do you think that noise is? That's familiar, but I'm not really sure. Do you want to hear it again?
If you guessed a coin, you're right. But they're no ordinary coins. That's a special coin with a special name.
Ooh. A convict token, or a love token. And historian and convict expert Hamish Maxwell Stewart knows all about them.
One thing that convicts often did when they were waiting to be transported is to get a love token made. If you want to understand a love token, you just really need to just get a coin. The convict, usually in prison, rubs the king's head off the surface of the coin, which is a criminal act in itself. Convicts take the coin and they would grind it on a stone. And then you would have a message inscribed on the surfaces of the coin. Often messages like, "When this you see, remember me." A direct reference to the pain of being split away from everything that you know. And then being transported off to this new world where there are going to be no friends, no family. And then they give the love token to a visitor to the jail. Usually a member of the family or a girlfriend or boyfriend.
If you want to see a real love token, have a look at the photo in your podcast app or in the Hey History show notes. It's a love token made by a convict, James Fletcher. You can see one for yourself on the National Museum of Australia's Digital Classroom website. Hamish is going to take a look at the love token, and he is going to be a bit of a detective and work out what these pictures might mean.
The token by James Fletcher has a man in a top hat, who is holding hands with a woman who's dressed in 1830s, 1840s clothing, and there's a small boy holding her hand. And so this is almost certainly James Fletcher's wife and their child. And on the other side is a message inscribed,
Time may pass and years may fly, and every hope decay and die, and every joyful dream be set, but thee I never can forget. Maybe the convict was going to Australia and he gave his wife a token. Maybe it means time will pass and years will pass. Every hope may die. Like, you may never see that person again.
I'm never going to see you again, but remember me.
Okay, we're halfway through the episode already. Pause the podcast here if you like. Hey, welcome back. Let's catch up on what happened in the first half. We visited students at Princes Street Primary School in Sandy Bay, and they told us what they know about convicts. Convicts are adults and children in Britain who committed a crime, were found guilty, and got sentenced to transportation. Transportation meant going halfway across the world, but as a prisoner, to work in a place like Australia for a long time, like 7 or 14 years, far away from home and family. We heard the stories of convicts, like Grace from Scotland. Grace stole clothes off little kids and got convicted. Convicts like Grace stayed in prison in Britain before they sailed on a ship out to Australia. And in prison, convicts often use coins to make things called love tokens. A love token has names, messages, and pictures engraved on it. And a convict would give the love token to someone they loved and had to leave behind when they went to Australia. Okay, all caught up? Let's go. So now we're going back in time again to the convict we've been following, Grace. She's in prison in Edinburgh, in Scotland. The year is 1844. Grace is told that the sailing boat is ready. She's going to Lutruwita, Tasmania.
Question time!
What was it like travelling across the ocean on, like, a boat with heaps of people?
Ahoy there!
When you're on one of these ships, way out in the open ocean, you might be able to imagine soaring above your heads those masts and those big sails billowing in the wind. They're not very big, these ships. They're not like ships that we see today. They get bounced up and down over the waves. They roll from side to side. Now, this is going to go on for somewhere between 3 and 5 months. Eventually, they'll arrive down here in the Derwent River, the big main river of Lutruwita, Tasmania.
As many as 25,000 kids and teenagers came to Australia as convicts. Some came with a family member, like their mum, dad, brother or sister, and some convict kids came alone.
What new questions can we ask?
I would ask a convict what it was like getting, like, separated from their parents.
Nice question, but how do you find out? Where do you start looking? Archives can be a place to look, says Hamish. Archives can be old documents, like old diaries, letters and record books.
You know, that's a problem with history generally. The things that get recorded in archives are often very boring and are often not the bits of our lives that are the most important. But when you've got a lot of information, you can start to piece things together. But the other thing we can do is that we can look at the descriptions of the tattoos on their bodies.
Did Hamish just say tattoos? Hamish says that convicts got tattoos on the ship out to Australia. Convicts had a 5-month journey with no books, movies or games. What are they going to do?
You would draw out the image on a piece of paper and lick it, stick it to your hand, and either yourself or somebody else would get a sharp point and prick through.
Ow! Ow!
And then they would rub, in the best case, ink in, but sometimes gunpowder and sometimes just soot, dirt.
Seriously? Convicts are getting dirt tattoos. There's no way that's safe. So did they get infected?
They did get infected. And in fact, we have surgeons on board convict vessels who describe some pretty awful infections.
Hey, I'd like to know...
What tattoos do convicts get?
There are many, many different types of tattoos. Quite often they're religious. Angels and crucifixes and lots of references to family. Tons of initials. Anchors, which is the sign of hope.
It would give you hope of going back to England and your family, I think.
With adult convicts, we quite often get little tattooed images of a man holding a woman's hand with children around, and sometimes they have initials underneath them so you can identify them. So it's the convict's family.
Yeah, it would be like a photograph, I guess, of somebody that like you knew you weren't going to ever see again to prove that you like love them or you like you will never forget them. Yeah.
You know, you can read a lot of them as kind of almost promises that a convict will never forget you and you should not forget them.
It would be a big reminder of home and realising your family's always with you.
Does anyone in your family have a tattoo? Especially a tattoo that means a lot to them?
My dad, uncle, auntie all have tattoos. And my dad's tattoo has a massive Orthodox cross on his back.
My dad has a tattoo of all of my siblings' names and me, because he cares about us.
Back in convict times, it wasn't just adults who got tattoos. Even children your age got them. Yep, kids got tattoos. Ellen Cayley, who you heard about earlier, remember she stole that handkerchief? She was transported to Australia at 12 years old, and she had a tattoo on her left arm. Her tattoo was the initials of someone's name, J.D. But how do we know that Ellen's tattoo said J.D.?
When every convict vessel arrived, every convict is brought and the girls, their arms were looked at. The boys, we know absolutely their shirts were taken off. Then they were told to rotate in front of a panel of three people. So a convict clerk and two officials who took down a description of anything that was peculiar about them, as well as the colour of their eyes, the colour of their hair, the shape of their chin, their ears, you name it. So although we don't have photographs, we've got the next best thing, which is this systematic record. And in that are all of the scars on your body and all of the tattoos. Which is pretty cool.
So convicts got love tokens made in prison and gave them to the people they loved. And some convicts got tattoos to remember the people that they loved and left behind. What do love tokens and tattoos say about the convicts?
Let's find out!
The convicted are often treated very differently. They're animals, they're not proper people. They didn't really believe in family. They were brutes. And things like love tokens show that they were very ordinary people, ordinary kids. Ordinary kids who stole and got convicted.
Now, let's go back to Grace and other convict kids like her. Grace stole that little kid's clothes and got convicted. After a trip that takes between 3 and 5 months, Grace's ship arrives in Hobart.
Eventually, they'll arrive down here in the Derwent River, the big main river of Lutruwita, Tasmania. And you can imagine they've been at sea for a long time, so they're probably swaying and rolling down that gangplank, because when you've been at sea for a long time, you're used to everything being unbalanced, so you keep on rolling even when you get off. There'll be government officials down there to meet them. And the government officials will be going down through their record. What was their crime? How did they behave on board the convict ship? Now, if they behaved well, and they didn't commit too bad a crime, then they would be sent out to work for a free settler.
And that's what happened to Grace. She went to work with a free settler. A free settler was the name of someone who came from Britain to Australia, but not as a convict. The government gave these free settlers land, taking it off First Nations people as part of colonisation.
Hey, I got a question.
If they got sent to a free settler's house, was their master or nice, or did they make them do really hard and horrible labour?
I'd like to know how the children and adults' jobs differed from each other.
You could be assigned out to work as a servant. You could be on a farm. You could work in a shop. And you would work just as hard as an adult. You would work before the sun came up, and you would work until the sun went down. And this one you're not going to believe. No weekends.
For 7 long years I toiled in pain and grief, and cursed the day that I became a thief. Oh, had I stuck by some honest trade, I'd ne'er have been a lass, a convict maid.
This is just hard work, every day, all day. For convicts like Grace, she has to work and do her job, and if she doesn't, if Grace sleeps in for half an hour, or maybe Grace sneaks out. She runs away for a little while because she just needs to get away from it all. When they catch her, or when they wake her up, she'll be punished. She will spend 12 hours bent over a wooden washtub. Her hands are in cold water, freezing cold. There were about 13,500 convicts who came to Lutra Witta, Tasmania. And we can actually find those records. So they are written, and we can actually go onto a computer and we can look up their records. On that record, we see their crime, their age, the ship they sailed down on.
It was these records, written down in books, that got Hamish into convicts in the first place.
The records are so detailed. So they describe the colour of the eyes of tens of thousands of people. So the detail is incredible. That grabbed me, that you can look into the past with convict records in ways that you can't with other records.
Hey, I got a question.
Why did the government find out and write down so much stuff about the convicts?
Early Australia was a kind of prison, but the emphasis here is kind of, because it didn't have that many walls. And so in order to catch you if you ran away, you needed a full description of what you looked like.
And it's those very records that can tell us the rest of the story of George, Ellen and Grace. George went to prison many more times. Then he got married and eventually moved to Melbourne, where he lived out his days. Ellen was in and out of the female factory in Hobart. In 1851, she was free. She might have had 3 children. There are no more records of her. And Grace did get back to her home country of Scotland and died at the age of 52.
Hey, can I ask something?
How did it all stop?
Yeah, when did Britain stop shipping its prisoners to the other side of the world? Over 80 years, the British sent more than 160,000 convicts to Australia. Convicts lived in Tasmania, like you've heard, and in Western Australia, Queensland, and New South Wales too. The convicts that came to Australia were mostly English or Welsh from Wales, and a quarter were Irish. And right from the First Fleet in 1788, convicts in Australia weren't all white. Some convicts came as British slaves from the Caribbean, from countries that used to be British colonies, like Jamaica and Barbados. Some convicts were African American. And there were English convicts of African descent. Around 1 in 5 Australians have convicts in their family, going way back. Maybe you're one of them.
For 7 long years I toiled in pain and grief, and cursed the day that I became a thief. Oh, had I stuck by some honest trade, I'd ne'er have been, alas, a convict maid.
Hey History!
You've been listening to Hey History. Hey, do you know we've put together some super cool stuff for you? You can make your own love token. What would you write or draw on your token? Go to our website, heyhistory.net, to get some inspiration from real convict tattoos and tokens. Plus, there's games, activities, and lesson plans for your teacher, parents, or carers. Hey, do you know that there's more episodes of Hey History? There's The Oldest Classroom, First Meeting in Kamei, Botany Bay, and Gold Fever. And a bonus episode for your teacher, How to Talk with Kids About Australian History.
Hey, History!
Thanks so much to all the teachers and students at Princes Street Primary School, Sandy Bay, and all of the staff at Cascades Female Factory in Hobart, Tasmania. Convict Made, sung by Blazey Clark, with guitar by Tom Clark. Hey, History is made on Gadigal Country by Anna Clark, Claire Wright, Jane Curtis, and Britta Jorgensen. It's endorsed by the History Teachers Association of New South Wales. Executive producers are Claire Wright and Anna Clark.
Ahoy there!
Claire Wright is Professor of History and Public Engagement at La Trobe University. Anna Clark is Professor of History at the University of Technology, Sydney. Podcast concept, design, and development by Anna Clark. Indigenous cultural consultant is Katrina Thorpe. Story editor is Kyla Slavin. Learning material by Nick Adeney. Thanks to all the students whose voices you hear in this episode, and their schools and teachers. Princes Street Primary School in Sandy Bay, Marrickville West Primary School, Westbourne Grammar School, Presshill Primary School, La Perouse Primary School, and Yirrkala Bilingual School. Hey History is produced by the Australian Centre of Public History at UTS and Impact Studios. Impact Studios' executive producer is Sarah Gilbert. And your host is me, Axel Clark.
Bye. See you later.